Hi everyone, welcome back to What Medical School Doesn't Teach Us, or MSDTU, a podcast by Medics Money. And I'm Matthew, one of the co-hosts. I'm joined today by Syra.
Hi Matthew, thank you for having me.
Very welcome. And yeah, so today, everyone, we're going to be talking about the very basics of credit scores for students and what you can do to potentially improve it, what you need to be aware of. And at the very end, we're going to be revealing all, and we're going to tell you what our current credit scores are at the minute and why. You're listening to What Medical School Doesn't Teach Us, where we tackle pro financial tips for medical students and foundation year doctors, career ideas, and how to leverage your skills and time more effectively. Join us, and remember the golden rule: this podcast is for general information only and does not constitute any form of advice. So, Syra, we often start on this podcast. What's your kind of experience with credit in general? How did you approach it?
So basically, credit score is really important because a credit score is used by lenders to decide how much or whether they're going to lend to you or not, how favourable the interest rates you'll receive are, and how favourable the terms you're going to receive are. So having a good credit score counts in your favour. Having a not so good credit score can even mean not getting any credit whatsoever. And based on how current things are with the cost of living crisis and how expensive things are, people are using credit now more than ever. So having a good credit score really matters. In terms of credit score curation, because of the way the credit score is calculated, it on your record, the last 6 years are always present, which means even if you're at medical school, and say that you're at medical school for a six-year degree with one intercalation year, if you make a mistake in your first year, it's going to affect you when you graduate from medical school and start as an F1. That's how I put it into context. So actually being careful now isn't just one of those, oh, let's just do it. It's actually really important because when it comes to you graduating medical school, you're going to need your credit score to be good so that you can either get the rental agreement that you need because they do check your credit score, and you can get the mobile phone contract you want, the car lease that you need, any credit cards that you need to make the shortfall between graduating medical school and starting as F1. So your credit score is actually very important.
It is. And so as I understand it, there are a couple of different ways it can be calculated, a couple of different providers. So do you mind telling us how it's calculated and what sort of factors go into that number?
Absolutely. So there are basically three different providers. These providers are Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And a lender will use one of them or a mixture of all three, and we never really know. There's a bit of a wall and there's a few secret things going on. No one really knows what the differences between the unions are and how their calculations differ. But basically, they'll use three different factors when they're calculating your credit score. They'll look at your old debt and see how old your debt is. If you've got old debt on your account, it basically suggests that you're not able to pay it off and that you're depending on old debt to live. And that is a bad thing. So the more old debt you have, the worse it looks. They'll look at new debt. So you can never get it 100% right with these things because you're always doing something wrong in their eyes, but it's more a spectrum and it's the extremes of. So the new debt, they might say, oh, you've got this new debt. What's happening? Why do you suddenly need this new debt? Is something wrong? Does it suggest that you're not actually going to be a very good person to pay back what we lend you? And then they'll look at your payment history. And this is the most heavily weighted part. So if you've missed a payment, even something as small in the last 6 years as 1 month's mobile phone payment, that will come back and bite you in the bottom. There was a famous footballer who made millions each bloody week, and he wasn't able to get a loan because his credit score showed one missed mobile phone payment when he was 18 years old. So it can definitely come back and bite you on the bottom. And so using these reports, this is how they calculate it. And there's lots of things you can actually do to influence your own credit score.
That's incredible. And so it's always my understanding, because I've just actually recently started using Amex for the first time, like a real adult. At least I feel like anyway. And with old debt, they have a feature on Amex and presumably other credit cards too, where you can pay off basically a minimum balance, like a minimum payment to meet their requirement for the month. And it's my understanding that old debt encapsulates just doing the bare minimum and it sort of hangs over you for months on end.
Yes, and how it works. And that, when you hear of people who've had long time, you're wondering how do they have £20,000, £30,000 worth of debt? Where is it? You know, when you hear those stories in the news, a lot of it is basically stuck on these credit cards. And what they're doing is they're basically paying off the minimum payment. So the minimum payment will be between 5 and 10%. The bank will decide what your minimum payment is. And then the balance attracts a 5% interest. So the value of the amount you'll need to repay keeps increasing month on month. So they perhaps didn't spend £20,000, but now their debt is worth £20,000 because they've not been paying it off enough for the interest to accrue and increase the balance. And so the only time I'd say pay off the minimum payment is, say, if you're using a 0% credit card and you're planning to make a big purchase and you're aware that you're going to get enough money to pay it off before the end of the 0% purchase term. And so you keep making the minimum payments. The balance doesn't attract an interest charge because it's a 0% on purchases. And then when it comes towards the end of it, you can either pay it off completely or you can balance transfer it, which, you know, we can go into that, but that's, again, it creates another cycle of debt. And you have to be very careful with these things. You can't just start and then just leave it. You have to very much be on top of these credit cards where you know exactly when the payment's due, you know exactly when the term's going to end, and you know exactly how much you need to pay off by the end. And that's the only time I'd suggest using minimum payments. Otherwise, you end up in this cycle, like I said before, where your balance just keeps accruing interest and then your debt just spirals out of control.
So I'm sure we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but in terms of credit limits, I mean, there's an extremely vicious cycle here, whereas if you've been extremely good so far, you know, you've paid off everything and you come to apply for a credit card and they see, oh, this, you know, he's done very well, let's give him a nice juicy credit limit. And then if your credit limit gets too high or you don't use enough of it, they get angry at you again. Like, it just seems like such an unfair cycle, isn't it?
It is very counterintuitive, and I completely agree. And that's why I said I don't really think anybody really knows what's going on back there. But it is very much sort of, say you get a credit card for £5,000. You use that credit card quite carefully. You don't spend too much on it. And then they'll look at it and go, do you really need all that credit? You don't really use it. However, if you use more than 50% of it, they'll go, oh my God, why are you using over 50% of your credit? That's too much. And so, like I said, you can never 100% get it right. All you can do really is use enough of it to strike a balance between being able to use credit responsibly and being able to pay it back. And that's sweet spot. So I'd say the sweet spot where you're likely not to suffer from them going, you've got too much credit that you're not using, and them going that you're using too much of your credit, is using about 40% maximum. And then that way, you know, you're not going to get hit, but you're using enough of it to justify having the credit.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we'll talk about our sort of percentages a bit later on because it's part of our credit score. I guess I wanted to ask you one thing. I mean, I used to play a bit of roulette with my mobile phone bill. I used to pay it off myself every month. And there was one month where the stuff going on, I very almost missed it. So what would have been the implication, do you reckon, if I had missed that? How long would it stay on my record? And is there any way that I know what I've done, but is there any way that you'd recommend to mitigate missing these payments?
Mm-hmm. So that would have stayed on your record for 6 years. They would have been able to see that for 6 years. And if you had genuinely missed it, you can't then, you know, realize that I've missed it. You might even have paid it the next month, but it'll still count as a missed payment. You can't then go to them and go, well, I paid it, so could you just take it off as a missed payment so it doesn't affect it? They won't do that. It was a missed payment, full stop. This is why it's really hard to get things sort of rectified once they're on your credit score. And if there is an error, a genuine error on your credit score, it can take anywhere between 18 months to 3 years to rectify that error. And it has to be a genuine error, not just something where you've rectified the problem, like with the missed mobile phone payment, you've gone and paid them the next month and you fix the issue. You might have squared it off with the mobile phone company, but that's still there as a missed payment. That's not an error. Whereas if there's something genuinely erroneous, so for example, they've got a credit card on there that you didn't really have, then you might have been a victim of fraud, for example, or there may have been a genuine mistake by a company with a direct debit. All of those things can take such a long time to fix. And for example, when you're at a stage in your life where you really need this credit, so you're applying for mortgages, you're applying for a loan, you're trying to get a car lease, waiting 18 months to 3 years and not being 100% sure whether it's going to be fixed or not is a very precarious position to be in. And a way to mitigate that, which I'm really glad you've done, Matthew, is direct debit. Automate. If you automate it, you know it's going to happen, you know, and they have your direct debit details. So anything that goes wrong with the direct debit, their fault, not yours. So even if something goes wrong, even if it's like they have a missed payment because they have some sort of update on their software or system, it can't count as a missed payment. Whereas for example, a standing order can, because a standing order is something that you have set up from your end. So say there's something, a problem with your bank account, say someone's spending or you're spending something weird in Bucharest and your bank has decided they're going to just shut down all the spending on your bank account until they figure out what's going on. That includes standing orders, then it'll be a missed payment. And despite it not being really in your control, it'll still be your fault. So basically, direct debit is the safest way to prevent that from happening. What I love about direct debits is, and I don't recommend doing this, but it does feel like some of it is in your control because you can always cancel the direct debit from your end. If, you know, if worst case scenario, you need to do that, you still have some control over it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to, this is half a segue into our next kind of things that students can do specifically, but would you recommend using a credit card to pay off bills like that? Or is that a bit too cyclical? Is that a bit unadvised? What do you reckon?
So you want to create a record that you're able to use credit responsibly and you're able to pay it off. That's the whole purpose of a credit score. And what you do is, so when you have a student bank account, you're usually offered a student credit card as well. I remember, don't even ask me how long ago I went to university. It's not fair. I had a student credit card of £250. And that, my baby little credit card. And so what I did with it is I just bought my grocery shop on it. And at the end of the month, I paid off the full balance. Now, most people would do their grocery shopping on their debit card and they wouldn't really need to. And hopefully they're living within their means and they're not going with debt. So I know that whatever I spend on my credit card, I will be able to pay off at the end of the month. Because in terms of student credit cards, you don't really get 0%. You can get 0% overdrafts, but it's unusual to get a 0% student credit card. But what that does is it shows the lender that, oh, they can actually responsibly pay off the balance every month and they are able to manage their money well. And it's not a huge credit limit that you're going to be able to sort of make a massive mess of it if you go on a night out and just put everything on the credit card, ideally. But yeah, starting small is really good. And the other thing I would suggest is if you don't need the credit card for something specific, like a 0% purchase credit card to buy something big, then I would suggest using a rewards credit card. So for example, Tesco, Sainsbury's, you can collect points for the on those, even M&S and all of them, you can actually collect points on your purchases and then use those points towards something else. So actually, and you're going to spend that money anyway because you're planning to spend the money on your groceries and planning to pay off the balance as it is. So you may as well get a few points out of it or some cash back. So see if you can get a credit card with some rewards.
So as I alluded to earlier, it forms a partial segue into things that students can do right now to sort of start building this credit score. Obviously, credit cards, we've already covered that. Making small, regular purchases on it, like groceries, and then making sure it's paid off in full. That really goes a massively long way into building that good score because, especially for me, 6 years of record, in the next 6 years, I might be looking at a mortgage if I'm very lucky. Well, who knows? But building that is probably the most important thing for me is to having a good score, getting a good rate. But anyway, so we talked about credit cards. Are there anything else in relation to that that students can look at doing now to start building this score?
So you and I were talking earlier and you said something really surprised you, didn't it? What surprised you? Remember?
I can't remember.
No, that's fair enough. You surprised was the address. And you're yes. Surprised that where your address is, or as in the address records, make a big difference. Now, basically, what your credit score depends on is that your address with your bank has to be the same as the address of your home and the address where you're registered to vote. So the electoral register. All of them have to match. And so I'll give you an example. My partner, he lived with his parents and then went to university. It's fine and it's legal to be registered to vote at your parents' address whilst you're at university. So that's absolutely fine. And he never changed his address with his bank accounts because he was registered at home anyway. And he was able to get his bank statements and it was absolutely fine. So his credit score ended up being absolutely perfect, despite never having a credit card, never having any sort of anything. But because his address had been 100% reliable, it showed that he was a reliable person and he could stay in an abode and he wasn't sort of moving around. And that meant his credit score was good. My credit score kept on being affected because I went to university as a mature student. I'd moved out of my parents' house years ago and they'd moved as well. So my bank address, which is a pain in the bum to actually change, my electoral register address and my home address obviously kept changing almost every year. And as a result, it made me look like someone who wasn't very reliable because I couldn't stay in one place for more than a year. And because of that, my credit score wasn't as good as his credit score, despite me having had loans, credit cards, car leases, and having paid them back reliably, my credit score had gone down because of how my addresses have changed so frequently. And I think as medical students, that will happen to you guys as well. And so it's actually worth just making sure that, you know, having a real think, where do you want your address to be? Is there, like, is it better that you keep your electoral register, so you're voting your home and your bank address at your parents? If that's better, you can still access your bank statements. It's absolutely fine. Or do you need to change it every time you move? And if you do need to change it every time you move, please change it every time you move, because it's so easy to forget to do it. And there are a lot of barriers to doing it. So for example, when you move, you have to change it on your driving license, which takes ages, and then your bank won't accept certain documents. So your driving license has to reflect your new address. And it is really complicated. I found it really frustrating. However, if you decide not to do it, it can significantly impact your credit score because of the address issue. But also, if you have something like, we have friends who, one half of the couple had a parking ticket that they weren't aware of because they hadn't changed their address with their car, with the DVLA. So the parking ticket kept going to an old address and they had no idea. And now it's got to a stage where the parking ticket's gone to court. And because there's a court case related to it, his credit score has now halved. It is impossible to use. And they're looking to get a mortgage. So they've gone from being able to apply for a mortgage with two people to my friend having to apply for a mortgage on her own. And, you know, it's just not working. So they've been pushed back by years on buying a house when they were ready because of this issue. And it is not an error. He's never going to be able to go back and go, oh, that's a mistake, because it's not. He'd not changed his address with the DVLA. Therefore, it went to the correct address. And therefore, you know, there's justification for the other side to be able to say this isn't a mistake. So this isn't going to affect his credit score for a few months. It's going to affect his credit score for the next 6 years. And that's how easy it is for these things to spiral.
Yeah, one thing I did when I moved recently, which we'll talk about, that's come up in this credit score. They're not very happy with me. But I made a massive list of things that need to change. You know, your driving license, your vehicle logbook as well, if you have a car.
Your V5 booklet, yeah.
V5, that's the one. Yeah, I don't have it anymore, luckily, but I had to do that to update my, you know, electoral register, my banking address. So just, if you want my two cents.
Any pensions that you have, yeah.
Oops.
Yes,
I forgot that one.
Because all your pension paperwork, if it doesn't come to you, how are you going to be able to claim it when it comes to, and how are you going to be able to prove your address when it comes to drawing it down? So even any pensions that you've got, you have to let them know.
Yeah, so there we go. There's something I haven't done already. So it's so easy to miss these little things, but so important. And, you know, you can bet as soon as you finish recording, I'll be straight on there updating my information. Yeah. But my two cents is, do keep a track of what needs updating, just so when you move, because like me, I'm in a stage of my life where I'm actually going to be moving around a fair bit for a while, just around London, and it's not going to go too well with the credit score, but you just need to make sure you've got it on autopilot that you need to update right this, get it done. So, yeah, you'll reap the benefits in the long run, especially if you're moving to a permanent address, make sure you get that switched over. So, Syra, is it time to reveal all?
Oh my goodness. Okay, right. I'm logging in. Let's do it.
Okay.
So we're both using TransUnion, aren't we?
We are indeed, yeah.
So TransUnion classes its score out of 710. Okay, Matthew, what's your score?
Okie dokes, it's just come through. So mine is currently 633 out of 710.
Nice, okay. Yeah. And what does
Which
that
is,
make it?
Luckily for me, at least for now, that is actually excellent. So that's, you know, about as good as it could be.
Yeah. It just describes you in one word, I think.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
and mine is, and I'm a massive loser, is 601 out of 710, which is fair. So that's a rating of 3 out of 5. And it's not great.
But there are some reasons for that. Does it give you a breakdown, right?
It does, actually. So the problem I'm doing is I'm using over 50% of my credit limit on one of my credit cards. So I've got two credit cards. One of the credit cards I don't use because the 0% interest thing ran out, so I don't actually use it at all. And so that's a bad thing because I've just got credit sitting around, and I have to admit, I've just not been able to get around. I hate ringing banks because it takes forever. And I just have to ring them and close the account. But then that'll class against me as well, because there's a change and they don't like change. So it's all, like I said, a spectrum. And then the second thing is I've got another credit card that I do use, which is on 0%, and I'm using slightly over 50%. So my credit limit is £5,000 and I'm using 2,600 and it has hit my credit score. So it's not like they're going, oh, it's only a little bit, we'll be fine. No, it's gone over, so they don't like it. But the good things I'm doing is I'm registered to vote. I'm paying all my accounts on time, touch wood. I have got long-standing accounts. This is what I meant about new versus old. So they like that some of them are long-standing, but they don't like that some of them are debt that's long-standing. Mm. So if you have a current account that's old, that's fine, because it shows that you are sticking with one bank and, you know, it's all reliable. You don't have any judgments or insolvencies, which is what that person had. He had a judgment, obviously, which hit his credit score. And you don't have any default. So default is another word for missing a payment. And that would be on a credit card, a car lease, or a mobile phone contract, for example. So that's what's affecting mine. What's affecting yours? Your excellent scores.
Yeah. So the main gripe they have with me at the minute is that I've only been registered to on the electoral register 4 months for my current address, which actually... No, it's not good enough, is it? In fact, I thought I registered sooner than 4 months ago, but who knows? So,
well, this is actually the thing. So you might have registered way sooner than that, but how long does it take for those letters to come through? How long does it take for it to be updated on the council side of things? So it's not even, there's so many things that are not even in your control. And, you know, you can try your best, but that's affected your credit score.
It has, yeah. And then they seem to be worried that my credit limit is about 10K. They seem to be worried about that.
Is that because you're not using much of it?
Yeah, so it's weird because they flagged it up, but also they've said, great news, you're only using 2% of that.
Yeah, this is what I meant. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I feel like there's just not, yeah, it doesn't, I agree, it doesn't make very much sense. But like I said, if you were using 40% of that, they would have no gripes with either one of those. Because, and it's, they don't like too much credit limit lying around, and they don't like too much use of the credit limit. So you have to kind of hit the sweet spot.
You do have to hit the sweet spot. And so another good thing is that I've had no missed payments, so I didn't miss that mobile phone bill. Yeah, so we've done well there. And they're also quite happy that on each, I have two credit cards as well, and each of those I'm using less than 50% of the available limits. So I guess the only thing I can do is find a permanent place, which might not happen for a long time yet. So, but it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, yeah, it seems quite punitive to lose over, well, just about 10%, isn't it, almost, of the whole rating just for moving around. I guess that's how heavily they weighted.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's really hard, especially when you say you're living in London and people do move frequently, especially in the larger cities. Rents are going up. People sometimes have no choice. And to basically suggest that someone's not reliable because they've moved is a bit odd.
A bit odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
I suppose especially for medical students where there might be placements or and they could be posted anywhere in the country. It seems a little bit
Exactly. Yeah. So this is not going to be an issue for us just at medical school. It's going to be an issue for us all throughout training because we obviously have to go anywhere in the country to be able to get the place that we want. And as a result, we'll not be staying there for very long. And yeah, so you're right. It's actually not just something that impacts medical students. It'll impact us for the entirety of our training.
Yeah, it's a real shame. You know, there are things that we've outlined today that hopefully you can sort of start to look at, the most important of which is like not missing those payments at all, being wary of old and new debt, making sure to keep an eye on your credit limit and how much you're using it. But I think they'll be unhappy either way, so don't lose too much sleep over it.
So going to go away and do just one thing today, it's please go away and have a look for a free, there are places you can get free credit reports. You do not have to pay for it. And Money Supermarket, ClearScore and Experian are all three places where you can get your free credit report. Look at it in detail. Make sure everything is accurate. Make sure everything is covered. If there is an account missing, then it suggests that it's not connected to your name or your address, which suggests there may be an account that has been missed. If there's an account on there that you closed ages ago, you might need to contact them because they might not have actually closed it, but you thought you did. So accuracy really matters. And yeah, there might be issues on there that you're not happy with, but actually being aware and knowing is really important. And if everything is lovely and dandy, congratulations, good for you. Check it in 3 months' time and then check it in 3 months' time. Just keep an eye on it because you never know what's going to hit it. And like I said, you do not want to be stuck with 6 years of some rubbish on your credit report that you don't deserve.
Absolutely. Great advice, Sarah. I actually had a bonus question if you've got an appetite for it.
Oh, please, go for it.
So if someone got married or they needed to change their name for whatever reason, how does that interact with the credit score? What do you need to do to make sure it transfers over? What's your experience?
So you can actually just change your name on your credit score. So you can actually just update your details on your credit report and it's not going to affect your credit score. So change of name does not affect the credit score because you're not unreliable because you changed your name and you're not unreliable because you got married. However, you have to make sure then going forward that your accounts also reflect that. If you have loads of accounts with different aliases on them, it can be just quite difficult for them to track. And sometimes it can be quite hard to prove something. So say there's an issue or an error and you want to say that bank account's got an error on it and they'll go, well, can you prove that your identity and then all your identity documents are in your new name and you've got this old account. So it's actually just about making your life a bit easier for yourself. And so once you've updated it all, it's just a lot easier to address any issues because you'll just be able to prove your identity a lot easier. But it does not impact your credit score whatsoever.
Fantastic. Yeah, it just may seem like a daft question, but I wasn't quite sure how it works.
No, I think that's a completely valid question. I mean, if something so small is having too much debt and using too much of it, but not, you know, I mean, it, I wouldn't be surprised actually. So maybe we've given them ideas and we should.
Yeah, we'll say our credit scores suddenly plummet. We're like, oh no, we're on a hit list. Yeah, so thanks so much for coming on today. I think it's a really informative and excellent podcast. So thanks for your time.
You're very welcome. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We've got our ebook at medicsmoney.co.uk/MSDTU. That's medicsmoney.co.uk/MSDTU.
Follow us on Instagram as well on WMSDTU, What Medical School Doesn't Teach Us. Bit of a mouthful there, but please do follow us.
Cool. All right. See you, everyone. Take care. Bye now.